Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 20.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the finale of Season 20 of The Dark Paranormal, a season which, in genuine honesty, has been my favourite season to date. I think we've had some of the best experiences we've ever covered. The interaction with you guys has been phenomenal. You literally make the show. As I've said many times before, this is your show. So therefore, you guys have made this show better. You guys have made this season, in my mind, the best season yet. I've found a renewed love of both the paranormal and podcasting, which I didn't even know was waning until this season, when I enjoyed this season so much. So long may that continue on into season 21 and all other seasons which follow. And let's keep building this, what feels like a close-knit community, although it's in the hundreds of thousands, of people of like-minded paranormal enthusiasm. This show, The Dark Paranormal, kind of stands out as an outlier in terms of successful podcasts. And in today's day and age, where any celebrity is given a topic and therefore a podcast, just as a way of generating money for a higher network of some sort, we don't operate like that, nor have we ever. I am not a famous person. I am a paranormal enthusiast who literally started this as a hobby in order to try and communicate to people of a similar mindset. And it's quite unique that someone who isn't on TV, isn't a household name, has managed, due to your support and your ongoing interaction with the show, to keep a show that's literally ran by a guy who records in an attic space up there with some of the big names of the paranormal podcasting world. And that's down to you. So, season 20 has been huge for me in terms of milestones, and I wanted to take this time at the finale to say the biggest thank you to each and every one of you for A, allowing the show to get this far, and B, continuing your support of this independent podcast, especially in a world now drowned with celebrity podcasts. It's the realism of you guys that you send me every week that allows this show to be a standout, unique type of experience. So from the bottom of my heart, genuinely, thank you. Now, of course, we are going to mention our Patreon soon, but I do want to say, if you want to support the show in any other way, just subscribe to the show. That helps us massively. Leave us a nice review or tell your friends. Of course, they're all free ways to help the show, and they're just as important as anything else. Now, of course, our Patreons will have received this finale ad-free and before anyone else. But if you are listening to this on Friday, the day it's scheduled for public release, then you have around about maybe 10 hours. Because at midnight on the Friday of the release of the finale, UK time, the free week offer will end to the highest tier of our Patreon. And you can go over there for a full week and be able to experience the entire back catalogue of Dark Bites episodes, coming in at well over 100 hours worth of content, for you to binge maybe whilst we're off air for a few weeks, as well as to experience our wonderful community over there on Patreon. And it is the one thing I keep banging on about because I think it's such a spectacular and unique thing. And even though that community is made up of skeptics and believers, the level of support and the level of camaraderie over there is a breath of fresh air in the paranormal community, a place where usually hierarchies are formed, etc. They are non-existent within our Patreon team. And if you choose to stay on our Patreon, of course you will receive a new Dark Bites episode, a 30-minute episode of the shorter experiences we receive, which is a little less formal than our standard show, The Dark Paranormal, every single Sunday of the year without fail. And every episode that we release on the main feed will go to you ad-free and before anyone else. And as our Patreons have found out with this finale, you receive finales and the upcoming debut of Season 21 before it airs on the main feed. Now, if that sounds like your thing, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Just like the following wonderful new team members have. Nicole Callery, Zero, Rachel Sorchick, Jacqueline O'Reilly, Hannah Boz, This Gusting, Caroline Jonkman, Rosie Root, Kimberly Delgado, Lauren Sweetlick, Laura Luna, Emma Mallison, David, GN, Ryan Spillman, Diaz Churchwood, Vibeke Hochstad, Sally L, Devona Fisher, The Karate Fan, Carrie, John Feetenby, Rose Holmes, Frank, Cindy, Mary Malcolm Sanders, Kristen Estevane, and Kaz Spiteri. Thank you so much, guys. Genuinely, you keep the show going. You are the blood that allows the show to live. So if any of you guys wish to join our wonderful team at Patreon, and it sounds like your thing, where you'll get, of course, ad-free early access and a Dark Bites episode each week, as well as access to that back catalogue, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But before we hit today's episode, which is coming within a few seconds, a quick reminder that we still need your stories and always will. We used to have open and close times for submissions. That does no longer stand. Just head over to thedarkparanormal.com, click on Submit My Experience, and regardless of its length, we will find it an audience because that, at its core, is what this show is about. Sharing real paranormal experiences so we can all gain more knowledge about a subject and topic we all love. But right now, for the final time in Season 20, and for the last time until Friday the 8th of August, lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable, and of course, leave your disbelief at the door. As we find out just why, if she knocks, do not answer. Hello, Kevin. As you will tell from reading my email, due to the content, names and places have been changed for obvious reasons. However, I will state for this story my name will be John, and the location is in Northern Europe. However, not at the places specified. There are various legal reasons why I can't divulge even locations, as you will see. My experience took place a few years ago. It was after a very horrific divorce, and I do mean horrific. It was also at a time, in the country that I live and work, where there was a strong feel amongst employees around my particular sector that it would be good to send people under duress or stress to what we would refer to as wellness clinics, if they met up to the criteria. In my experience to you, I'll state I'm a procurement manager. That is not my role. In my real role, stress is a very real thing, and coupled with a heavy divorce, well, let's just say I was more than enough of a candidate for one of these wellness retreats. Thankfully, this practice has now ended after a touch of scandal happened about 12 months after my stay. I'm trying to be as informative but as vague as I can for very obvious reasons, but I will say that the retreat I attended was already a building with a quite dark history. It was once, apparently, some very wealthy person's home. It was later a hospital for Nazi soldiers, and then became a psychiatric hospital, before eventually being refurbished for this wellness initiative. I should state I've added this part on at the beginning of my email, although the email was written about 3 days prior. Just so you and the listeners can at least have a visual of the type of building this was. Imposing. Almost terrifying, really, looking back. It was set really far out from the city, but I mention that in my following email. I've been a long-time listener to your show, but I never thought I would be writing to you. I'm not someone who believes in ghosts. I enjoy ghost stories and paranormal stories, etc. But I don't believe in paranormal experiences as such. Or at least, I didn't. What happened to me at my wellness retreat in Switzerland a few years back, it left me questioning everything I thought I knew about reality. I'm writing this because the events didn't end when I left that place. They followed me home. Just last month, something happened that made me realize something I thought had ended had not, and I needed to get this story out there. If only to see if anyone else has experienced anything slightly similar. I should mention up front, I was in a very vulnerable state when all of this began. My company had sent me to this retreat after I'd taken significant time off work following a very messy divorce. The workplace assessment suggested I needed intensive mental health support in a controlled environment. These mental health wellness places were kind of picking up pace at the time within the field I work. We refer to them as executive rehab, in a sort of jokey manner. And after joking about these places, here I was, a 42-year-old procurement manager from Zurich, going to executive rehab. The wellness retreat itself sat in an isolated part of a mountainous area, accessible only by a winding mountain road that took 45 minutes from the nearest village. It's the kind of place that looks like it was designed by someone who read far too many minimalist lifestyle blogs. All clean lines, natural wood, and floor-to-ceiling windows showcasing the dramatic mountain landscape, at least on one side. The other side was its complete old self. And if I said picture a 400-year-old Northern European mansion that looks like it has bats flying around it, that's exactly what it would look like. The brochure promised a digital detox healing and reconnection with the authentic self. What it delivered was something far more unsettling. I must state that we, or at least I, were not tied to go there. We could have refused. However, at this point in time, it was very much frowned upon if a company in my line of work offered you this wellness retreat and you declined the offer. It would look very bad for you going forward. My point being is that although it was allegedly a voluntary stay, it was very much a case of stay or potentially lose your job. So of course, you agree. From the moment I arrived at St. Andrews, everything felt sterile and controlled. They took our phones, laptops, even my smartwatch. Complete disconnection from external stresses, the intake nurse explained with a practical smile. The facility housed maybe 20 guests at any given time, all dealing with various sorts of burnout, anxiety, or what they euphemistically called life transitions. The staff were professional and courteous, but they definitely kept an emotional distance. Polite smiles, therapeutic language, but no real warmth. My bedroom was sparsely furnished, a single bed, a desk with a chair, a notepad and pen, and an ensuite bathroom. The walls were bare, except for one irritating motivational quote about embracing change. Meals were communal affairs in a bright dining hall, and our therapy sessions were scheduled throughout the day, both individually and as a group. Our evenings were meant for reflection and journaling. It was on the second afternoon that I first noticed her. I was walking to my afternoon therapy session, and I caught a glimpse of silver hair turning the corner ahead of me. Just a flash, an elderly woman shuffling round that corridor corner with deliberate, careful steps. She seemed to be sneakily following another guest, staying maybe 5 feet behind them. But something about her movement struck me as odd. I couldn't place what it was, though. Later that evening, during the communal dinner, I found myself sat opposite a guy called Mark. He was an American, maybe 45, and dealing with what he called a midlife career implosion. He'd been at the retreat for 3 weeks. "You'll get used to the routine," he said, eating his dinner. "Though you'll notice the demographic here is pretty specific. All the women here are roughly the same age, late 30s to maybe mid-late 40s. They don't take in older guests, liability issues or something similar." I thought immediately about the silver-haired woman I'd seen. "That's interesting," I said to him. "I could have sworn I saw an elderly woman earlier today, in the corridor near the therapy wing." Mark looked puzzled, his fork halfway to his mouth. "Nah, definitely not. There's no one here that old. But," and he leaned in conspiratorially, "watch out for the guy with the wide eyes. Peter, I think his name is. He's intense. He just stares at people during any group sessions, even at dinner." Well, I hadn't noticed Peter yet, but Mark's description would prove prophetic. The first week passed uneventfully, though. I attended my sessions, I participated in group therapy, I tried to process the emotional wreckage of my divorce. The retreat's isolation was supposed to be therapeutic, and in a way it was, but I found it rather unnerving, especially the quiet at night. At night it was so silent, it felt oppressive. It was during my second week that things began to feel off. Small items started disappearing from my room. First, my pen that I used to journal with. Nothing significant, easily misplaced. But then my reading glasses vanished from my bedside table. There were not many places to search, but I searched everywhere before reluctantly asking the cleaning staff if they've moved them. They seemed confused and said to me they've never touched anyone's personal items. 2 days later, my leather wallet disappeared from the desk drawer where I'd locked it. This time, I was much more insistent with the staff. The facility coordinator, a stern-looking Swiss woman, took my complaint seriously enough and promised to investigate. She even had security review the hallway cameras, though she mentioned the recordings showed nothing unusual. "Maybe it's the stress of the adjustment. It's affecting your memory," she suggested, gently, not realizing how condescending that was. "It's not that uncommon in the early phases of treatment," she went on to say. Interestingly, I wanted to argue, but doubt crept in. Was I misplacing things and forgetting? I know the divorce had left me broken, scattered to the wind. And the retreat's enforced simplicity was more disorienting than I'd expected. Then, on a Tuesday morning, everything returned. I woke to use the bathroom around 6 a.m, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. Every missing item, the pen, my glasses, my wallet, even a book that I'd forgotten had gone missing, was arranged in a perfect line on the bottom of my bed. Not scattered, not dropped, arranged, as if someone had walked in and placed each item with deliberate precision. My hands were shaking as I checked my bedroom door. No, still locked, as I remembered from the night before, from the inside. The chain also still engaged. The window was 3 stories up, with no balcony nor fire escape. There was no rational explanation of how someone could have entered my room, left these things, and escaped again. That morning at breakfast, I was too rattled to eat. I scanned the dining room hall, looking for, I don't know, an explanation, a guilty face. Instead, my attention was drawn to a man sat alone near the windows, staring directly at me with unnaturally wide eyes, unblinking. The breakfast in front of him, untouched. When our eyes met, he didn't look away, or blink, or even acknowledge me. He just kept staring. This, I thought, had to be Peter. He was maybe 50, thin, prematurely greying hair and those disturbing, perpetually wide eyes. He never seemed to blink. Even during group therapy sessions, I noticed he rarely spoke but would just go round one by one, staring at everyone intently, moving from speaker to speaker like he was taking in or databasing every word. After 3 days of his constant staring, I'd had enough. I kind of cornered him after lunch in the corridor. "Excuse me," I said, trying to keep calm. "I'm John. I think you're Peter." He stopped walking and slowly turned to face me, his eyes as wide as usual, studying my face with a very uncomfortable intensity. "You've been staring at me during meals and sessions. Do you want to say something to me, or is there something you need?" Peter blinked, only once, and then he opened his mouth as if he was going to speak, and then he snapped it closed and shook his head. "Okay, well, if you need something, you can just ask. There's no need to stare. It could be seen as rude." He nodded once and continued down the corridor, his gait oddly shuffling. I'd never really seen him walk before, but it was like an old man, despite his apparent age. I thought that was the end of it. I was exceptionally wrong. Today's episode of The Dark Paranormal is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Companies and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelda providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelda can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Two nights later, around maybe 2 a.m., I woke up with the unmistakable feeling of being watched. I rubbed my eyes and looked around my room, and I couldn't see anyone. But the room seemed darker than usual, and then I noticed it was for a particular reason. There was a face in my small rectangular window of my door. It was Peter. And here's the thing. Peter was a frail, old, peculiar man, in my eyes at least. And if we're talking about physicality, I was very confident it would be a one-way street, in my favour. But on that night, Peter didn't seem to be alone. It was as if he was with a gang of people outside my door. I felt really afraid to the point I held my breath, until my voice cracked. "Peter?" He turned to look directly at me. Those wide eyes found me in the darkness of my room. And for a long moment we just stared at each other. And then, without a word, he slowly began crouching down out of sight. Then I noticed a small white something being slipped under the door. I got out of bed, walked over, turned my light on. I checked the window, but Peter had long gone by now. It was a handwritten note that simply had scrawled on it, "If she knocks, don't answer." I recognized the paper as being from one of our journals. So I brought that note to my individual therapy session the next afternoon. Malcolm, my British psychiatrist, was in his 60s, and he read it with a frown. "Peter is an exception here," he said carefully. "His condition is more complex than most people like you. I remember you said something about confronting him in the corridor. Well, to someone like Peter, he would see that as a connection or a bond. I'd strongly suggest not engaging with him in any way going forward." "But what does it mean, the note? Don't let her in." Malcolm's face changed. He took off his glasses and said, "Peter sometimes experiences episodes where reality becomes fluid for him. As for the note, it's likely connected to something in his anxieties. Nothing that you need to be concerned with at all." Trying to lighten the mood, I forced a laugh. "Is he talking about that elderly woman, the one I keep catching glimpses of in the corridors?" Malcolm's pen stopped. "I'm sorry, what elderly woman?" "Silver-haired, maybe 70s. I see her in the corridors now and again. Usually following other guests, actually. She walks very slowly, like she's..." "John," Malcolm interrupted, "there's no one here that matches that description. Our eldest guest is Peter, and he's 49. The way he said it with such quiet certainty made my stomach drop. "But I've seen her multiple times." He leant back in his chair. "Are you sleeping? Because sleep deprivation can cause visual disturbances. Maybe we could discuss introducing medication." I declined and left that session feeling much more unsettled than when I'd arrived. Was I hallucinating? Was I having some sort of breakdown? The missing items, Peter's bizarre note, and now apparently seeing people who weren't there. Well, this all pointed to my mental state deteriorating rather than improving in this place. But that night, as I lay there in bed, staring at the wall, trying to fall asleep, I heard something that made my blood run cold. Three soft but deliberate knocks on my door. I held my breath, listening, staring at the wall an inch from my face. There was a very long silence, so much so I hadn't moved, but felt my eyes begin to close again. Whatever fear I felt before was now doubled. I was holding my breath, but almost simultaneously having a panic attack. Curiosity and stupid manliness got the better of me, and I quickly turned to the door, and the silver-haired woman was stood at my door. Her forehead and nose were pressed so hard against the glass, her nose was squished against the glass. Her face was straight on, but her eyes, almost coming out of their sockets to the right, to stare at me. Immediately hoping in the darkness she hadn't yet saw me move, I threw myself back against the wall. At which point, she let out a slow, low croak sound. Without moving my body so not to draw her attention, I slowly swiveled my neck, really cranking it so I could look straight at the door with making as less movement as possible. And it was at this point. She slammed her entire face against the window. I spun my head round so fast I genuinely pulled a muscle in my neck, but I stayed still and stared at that wall until daylight started to seep through the blind of my window. My final week at St. Andrews passed in a haze of increasing anxiety. The therapy sessions felt increasingly pointless, as I struggled to distinguish between my genuine emotional processing and what might be the signs of a psychological break. But I knew I wanted out, which meant I needed to play a game. So I mentioned nothing to Malcolm, agreeing that I was now personally convinced my previous episodes were also stress-related, and that was clear to me now. In reality, I could not shake the feeling that something was fundamentally wrong with that place or with me, because I continued to see the silver-haired woman. She was still following other people from a short distance and always as she turned a corner. The one difference now is before turning the corner, she would stop for about maybe 3 seconds before carrying on. Peter's staring intensified, but I kept my distance after Malcolm's warning. Still, I would often feel his wide eyes tracking my every movement during group sessions and meals. Strange little incidents began punctuating my days. During breakfast once, I watched as a fork slid on an empty table about 6 inches across the table, with no apparent cause. No vibration, no movement from anyone nearby. No one else saw it but me. Then there was the lights flickering in the therapy room, during a group session. Again, no one brought it to anyone's attention. And I didn't feel like I should, just in case it wasn't really happening. Then, on 2 separate nights, for 2 separate occasions, my bathroom toilet flushed in the early hours. I suppose each of these could have had a rational explanation, or at least a slightly plausible one. It's an old building. Mountain weather can affect electrical systems, and my own stress manifesting in misperception. All of these things could be valid explanations. In fact, I needed to believe that's what was happening. My act of being completely cured and feeling fine must have worked because Malcolm came to me to say that if I so wished, I could leave earlier than was planned. And believe me, I wished. But the night before my departure, I couldn't sleep. Something was off. Not dramatically, but like a note being played slightly off key. The silence in the corridors seemed heavier than usual, like a pregnant expectation. Around 2 a.m., as I'm laying facing the wall as usual, trying to force myself to sleep, this time I didn't move, I didn't even breathe, and the only thing that came to my mind was Peter's note. If she knocks, don't answer. Whatever instinct has kept humans alive for millennia was screaming at me to stay still. And then, that horrid croak. It was her. I didn't need to look to know. Thankfully, I remember locking my door. At least, I think I did. I hoped I did. Did I lock my door? Finally, silence returned, and exhausted with anxiety, I dropped off at some point. But when I woke the next morning, my heart started pounding, because my door was wide open. I shot upright, my heart hammering. I was certain I'd locked it before bed. It was a habit by now. I checked the hallway, but it was empty. I showered quickly, packed my belongings, eager to leave. As I waited in the lobby for my taxi, the other guests began preparing what the staff called the congratulatory corridor. Even though I'd taken part in many of these stupid events, I'd completely forgot it would happen to me when I left. It was tradition at St. Andrew's that when a patient left their course of treatment, the other patients would gather either side of a corridor and applaud, congratulating the patient who was now allegedly cured of all their mental disorders. It was meant to be uplifting for the patient leaving, and it genuinely seemed to be so for those who had left previous to me. But for me, knowing I didn't think I was fully cured of anything, I felt both like a fraud and increasingly uncomfortable as I faked a smile and walked through the applause. Near the end of the corridor, I spotted Peter. He wasn't clapping. He was crying. Something compelled me to stop in front of him. "It's okay, Peter," I said, trying to comfort him. "This is a good thing. I'm getting better." Peter looked up at me with those wide, wet eyes and whispered something as I walked away I almost missed. "I'm sorry. I'm sorry." I turned back and laughed. "No, no, this is good, Peter. This is a good thing." The staff then gently guided me towards the exit where my taxi waited. By the time I reached my apartment after over an hour and a half drive, I'd already started to rationalize the entire experience. Stress, isolation, unfamiliar surroundings. All perfectly logical explanations for what I'd experienced. Even the hallucinations of this woman and her croaking and banging and knocking. They were just probably led-on illusions created by Peter's note and my weakened mental state. I threw myself into building a new life. I obsessively cleaned, I bought new furniture. I prepared to return to work the following week. And for about a week, I felt genuinely better. The retreat, despite its horrors, had worked. At least I told myself. I was healing. Then, on about my eighth night home, the hallway light turned on by itself. I was watching TV when I noticed the glow spill into the living room. I got up to turn it off. I assumed I'd left it on by accident, although I distinctly remembered turning the lights off. The next night, I hear footsteps in the hallway outside my apartment. Soft, deliberate steps. Ones that pause directly outside my door for about 30 seconds before carrying on. As they carried on, I ran to the peephole, but the hallway was empty. But everything thus far was still completely rational to me. And then came the incident that shattered my carefully constructed rational experiences and explanations. I was watching a late-night movie, some mindless action film, when movement in my peripheral vision made me turn, and something grey looped through the air in a parabolic arc that suggested it had been thrown from waist height from the doorway, landing in the middle of the room. And it was a pillow from my bed. Now, despite the fact my bedroom was two rooms away from where I was, this pillow didn't just flop into the living room. It was thrown. It was thrown in a looping trajectory, meaning it was thrown from low to high to my floor, meaning something physical had thrown that pillow. Feeling much more confident in my own apartment, I ran through each room, but I was the only one in the apartment. All the doors and windows were locked, and I was on the fourth floor. I walked back into the living room in a daze. I sat on the couch and stared at this pillow in the middle of my living room floor. I put my head in my hands. Staring at this pillow, I thought about Peter and wondered why he was crying when I'd stopped to comfort him, and why he was saying he was sorry, repeatedly. Sorry for what? Then another memory surfaced. My door being open on that final morning. Even though I was certain I'd locked it. What if Peter hadn't just been warning me about knocking? What if he'd been trying to tell me or trying to do something else entirely? Peter's note had said not to answer the door if she knocked. But what if Peter, in some misguided attempt to help or connect, had let her in? What if Peter, fully aware of what he was doing, let her in? Because here's something I found out myself about Peter. Only a month after I was released, Peter, who'd been there for a long, long time, was given a full, clean bill of health and released. Interestingly, I've never saw or heard from the silver-haired woman again. However, when I'm stressed, what could be deemed as paranormal events do take place in my apartment. Things moving, things opening, such as the fridge, cupboards. I'm very stressed right now at work. Thankfully, the wellness program has gone away, but things are starting to get a bit strange. For example, what prompted me to write this email to you is twofold. Firstly, last night as I was watching TV, I was convinced I heard the croak of the silver-haired lady outside my front door. Of course, I needed total silence in order to clarify that, but when I turned my TV off, it stopped. But I'm not convinced it was not that sound. My second reason for writing in, and I'm writing this as I work, is if anyone else out there has experienced this type of thing, and I mean getting stressed, and then these things start to happen, and they've found some sort of solution to it, then I'd be all ears. Because although I joked about St. Andrews, in truth, I no longer have a place of mental refuge, other than going to see my doctor, etc. And that will lead me into actual psychiatric hospitals, which is something I really don't want. So if anyone has any suggestions, if you read this out, that is, could you please forward them on to me? Kind regards, John. Well, John, thank you ever so much for genuinely one of the most disturbing stories I think I've read in a good while. Now, I'm at an unfortunate advantage to the listener in terms of I know the location John's referencing. However, John's fully explained to me why that can't be divulged, and that's not only his prerogative, but I completely agree with him the reasons why. But as John did ask, if anyone has experienced this phenomena, and we know this phenomena occurs frequently in the paranormal, stress is often a key build-up or aggravator, if you will, of paranormal phenomena. It's documented in many famous worldwide cases, but usually with teenage people or people going through puberty, etc., not normally with middle-aged people of any sex or gender. So if you yourself have any experience of this, you can email us still at contact@thedarkparanormal.com. But that's only for experiences relating to John's experience or for suggestions regarding the show, such as ideas for Dark Realms episodes. Any of your experiences, as we said at the start, still need to go through our new form, which is in the show notes, or can be found by going to thedarkparanormal.com and clicking on Submit My Experience. I've really looked forward to delivering this episode because it's very rare, on The Dark Paranormal at least, that we leave an episode open-ended. And people may think this is not open-ended, but for me it is. We're left wondering, was this all just part of John's imagination? If not, what role did Peter play? And indeed, if Peter was possessed or haunted by this silver-haired woman, did he indeed just pass her on to John? So thank you, John. I really enjoyed your submission. I've really enjoyed season 20, so thank you everyone for taking part. I cannot wait to bring you season 21 on Friday, August the 8th. And until then, unless you're a Patreon, of course, take care, stay safe. Do subscribe to the show so that you don't miss our debut episode. And in the meantime, just remember, if you're ever discussing the paranormal, always keep some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll speak to you next time, Friday, the 8th of August, for the beginning of season 21 of The Dark Paranormal.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.